Welcome to Marilyn Solutions with Reverend Marilyn, the speaker for the new millennium. Join Marilyn as she talks with guests offering a wide range of talents and information. And now, here's Marilyn.
Welcome to Marilyn Solutions. We're so glad you're here today. We have a real treat today. We're coming from Eugene, Oregon, where we're going to be talking with Kelly Elstrat, who is here to discuss his book on the Fifth Revelation. And before we have a chance to talk with Kelly, he's hoping you have questions about the Urantia book and his book, which is the Fifth Revelation, which are quotes from the larger original source. So the phone number for calling in today is Pierce County, 253-584-1480. Again, get your pencil, 253-584-1480. And in King County, toll-free, do call us from King County also. We've had your calls, 253-804-5765. So give us a call from King County, toll-free, 253-804-5765. And for those of you that are interested in my angel art, inspirational plaques, and other, in my book that's at available in Tacoma at Crystal Voyage at Freight House Square, go over there and check out the things that she has of mine. And remind yourself and your friends, your angels are with you always. And let Crystal know that you can say hi. You've heard about her program and her store on the air. And any other sponsors we have also, like STOP over in Tacoma, is helping people that have had DWIs, domestic violence problems, need evaluations, or needs that treatment that goes along with it. They're terrific over there. So let them know that you heard their messages and let them know that you're appreciate their supporting this program. Now, Kelly, we want to get a chance to find out more about you. He's here to talk about his book, The Fifth Revelation. Kelly is a chemical engineer and father of six children, including triplets. I think that's brave. Although he is raised as a Catholic in Louisiana, he has been an avid student of a very special spiritual book, the Urantia book, for 25 years. Kelly's love of the ancient history, astronomy, and uplifting spiritual message contained in the 2,000-page Urantia book led him to write his book, The Fifth Revelation, which is a collection of the key passages of the Urantia book. He has done many nationwide interviews and television shows and is here today to share with us his own spiritual journey. Glad to have you, Kelly.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Marilyn.
Well, we're looking forward to this, and we're very curious and interested. Who wrote the Urantia book?
I think everyone who reads it asks that question, starts trying to track it down. The book, I ran into it back in college in the 70s, and I was reading away at it, chewing on it, and wanted to know the same thing, and tried to look into it 20 years later. I even went to Chicago to visit the foundation that publishes the book. It's a little nondescript building in a side street in Chicago. And they're quietly sitting there publishing this book, and it was published back in the 50s, but its origins really go back to the 1920s. There was this guy on the Chicago Board of Trade, a real prominent citizen of Chicago, who started talking in his sleep. And his wife thought he had lost his mind and called in a psychiatrist, and this guy was hearing all these bizarre statements about God, the apostles, the structure of the universe, evolution, and Adam and Eve, and he said, man, this is great stuff, and got a stenographer to come there every night and take this stuff down. It went on for 20 years, and this guy disavowed any knowledge of what was being said, and he was an upstanding citizen. He didn't want anyone to get out, so they honored his wishes and waited till he died, and then 40 years after they first discovered him, they published the material. They were that patient to wait and honor his family.
Well, that's impressive.
And so you can see these people aren't sensational, out to look for money, and that was reassuring to me. And so their main focus of this foundation in Chicago that publishes Urantia book is just to do translations and publish it and put the book out there. And they think when the public is ready to discover it, they will, and some journey will cross that path, and it'll be time for them to read it.
Well, why is your book called The Fifth Revelation?
Well, my book, is an overview of the Urantia book, because it's kind of a hard book to pick up. Anyone who picks up a 2,000-page book where the first 600 pages talks about the nature and personality of God, it's some tough going there.
That's, I can vow to. I tried. I've been reading it.
It really, myself, when I was in college, Marilyn, I really read the last third of the Urantia book, which is the life of Jesus, for about 700 pages. Because it was more like the Bible and stuff I'd heard growing up, and it really put together all the old religions, the Eastern philosophies, and the, not just the Christian faith. And it tied everything together for me. And then when I got older and more into the engineering phase of my life, going to college, I got into the science of the book, the astronomy, the physics, the just vast spectrum of planets and types of people. It's just incredible. They say that Gene Roddenberry got a lot of his ideas for Star Trek from the Urantia book.
Well, I can believe that. And some of the parts about the universe were over my head.
And they talk about the prime directive in Star Trek, where you're not supposed to interfere with evolving planets. And that's one of the main things in the Urantia book, why they say angels don't publicly, get involved with our society. It's just an individual thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have to evolve in our own speed. When we're ready for information, we discover it.
Mm-hmm.
And so now that I'm older and, middle age, I guess I'm interested more in the front part of the book and trying to chew away at the nature of God. And that's when I decided to try to do a book on this, the Urantia book, was to try to make it easier for people to get a foothold on it and get an overview on it on a weekend at the beach instead of in 5 years of trying to read it.
Well, that's what it's done for me. Your book has helped me to be able to better understand the larger version, the real original version. It helped me to kind of put it down into more smaller bites. So how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. And that your book helped me do that.
Good. My daughter just met a bunch of people who met in Estes Park, Colorado. They have a conference every couple years. There were a bunch of kids her age from colleges around the country, and a lot of people had come to know the Urantia book from my book, and that was really gratifying to hear that.
Well, did you raise your family using the philosophy or religion of this book?
Well, I really try to encourage them to ask questions more than anything. We go to Catholic Church on Sunday, and but I always ask them their own feelings about stuff, and I interject a lot of the principles from the Urantia book, which are pretty basic principles, where family is the foundation of civilization, that God is three persons and things like that are a lot in the Urantia book. A lot of it seems like just the Bible, but taken to the next level. So I try to enlarge all the concepts that they learn from their traditional religion, because I think, if anything, going to church every Sunday, inconveniencing yourself for an hour once a week, kind of impresses upon kids and imprints them that it's important in their lives, whether they get it or not. I couldn't stand church when I was a kid, Marilyn. And now that I'm older, it's my most relaxing part of the week. I like to go in there and have quiet for an hour. And
right.
So, yeah, I do raise them, but also push them to the next level anytime that I can. So they ask a lot of questions that when they go to the little Bible class they have once a week there.
Mm-hmm.
They're all asking these penetrating questions that we discuss at the dinner table.
Oh.
And they come home. I think they cause a stir once in a while.
Well, I know in your quotes it really emphasized a lot about the importance of family, and that's why I asked that.
Well, they talk a lot in the book about the evolution of society, and there's probably 10 chapters on the one will just say be on marriage. One will be on family. Real basic concepts. One will be on handling anxiety and emotions and things like that. The part on the family, what really spooked me when I read it, was it talks about how, as a parent, you have the responsibility in the first 8 years to set the outlook of this child for eternity,
mm-hmm.
whether it's positive or negative, whether
right.
they... Because if God is really our Father in heaven,
mm-hmm.
and their first concept of what a father is you and your wife, being the shepherds of them, and that's how they're supposed to appreciate the concept of God. If you give them a real crappy concept of parents, they're not going to be able to relate to what God is, really.
Well, it makes it difficult if the model doesn't have the experience themselves.
Yeah, and that's one thing you don't need a license to have as kids.
That's for sure.
And I had them when I was 20, and I don't think I was the best.
Well,
that's why I had six. God kept throwing them my way till I got it.
Oh, well, my daughter has twins, and so I'm the grandmother of twins. Oh, there goes my age. And so when I said triplets, I really gulped because I knew how much she had her hands full with two at the same time. I can't even imagine three.
How old are they now?
Oh, they're 13 now.
Yeah, mine are 11. They're a ball, though.
Oh, that's terrific. I love them. One of the things that I was curious about was the connection between Adam and Eve and Atlantis.
Well, they talk about, you asked why my book's the fifth revelation.
Mm-hmm.
I think I never really answered you. There's five revelations, major epical revelations,
mm-hmm.
that have been presented to Earth to try to bring us to come to know God. And one goes way back, 300,000 years ago, which cratered and went down the toilet, which had Lucifer got involved in. Which they even cover that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The next one was Adam and Eve was the second. The third was Melchizedek, who really set up a revolution in religion back in 600 B.C. when Abraham came online and you had all the Eastern religions started flourishing. That was really God jump-started all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then they talk about Jesus being the fourth and the Urantia book the fifth. And going back to the second, Adam and Eve, they have three just wonderful chapters. And if you want to really decide whether the Urantia book is something you want to dig into or not, just go on the Internet, and the Urantia book's completely published on the Internet. I think it's Urantia.org.
Right, right. I was on there. I was impressed that it was on that. Yeah.
Urantia.org. And if you go there, you can see three chapters on Adam and Eve, and they just show this wonderful view of these people coming down from heaven 35,000 years ago to try to spiritually uplift our planet.
Well, stay tuned because we're going to come back with Kelly in just a minute and find out about what the Urantia book says about creation of the earth and evolution. So don't go away and listen to our sponsors, and we'll be back shortly. See you in a few minutes. Bye-bye. Welcome back to Solutions with Marilyn. We're having an interesting conversation today about the Urantia book. I call it the PhD of the Bible, Kelly. I got lost in some of it, but I understood most of it pretty well. And one of the things I think that people are interested in is the creation of Earth and evolution. And what did the Urantia book have to say about that?
Well, they talk about how there's these wonderful angels that I really want to try to sign on with when I die. They travel the tracks of the universe looking for planets that are inhabitable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a bizarre thing to think of, but there's these core, that exploratory core, kind of like Lewis and Clark expedition on a grand scale. And they have, I think, 5 trillion inhabited planets discussed in the Urantia book as existing right now.
Wow.
And these angels look for planets not too hot, not too cold, kind of like the bear's porridge. And when there's one like Earth, they say, okay, let's mark it down. And some other angels come in, they call life carriers, which then look at the, like our planet was carbon-based compounds. There was a lot of water available. So they designed a cell to fit the briny deep, the salt water that still flows through our veins now, and have the cells planted here. And once they do these experiments, they really manipulate life. They don't create it. Only God can. And once they have it set up, God sends his little self there and plants the life here. And they plant it in 3 places on Earth, and it's spread across the planet. And they give a timeline, really, of the nebula forming 500 billion years ago that we were part of.
Mm-hmm.
600 billion years ago, the sun that we're part of spun off of that nebula. And then about 4 billion years ago, our solar system was born when a dark gravity body went by our sun and drew out matter from the sun. and that matter got pulled by the gravity away from our sun, and then this dark gravity body just moved off, and the matter in space around the sun just kind of collected, and that's why it's kind of fat in the middle and tapers off either end.
Oh.
You know, you have Saturn and Jupiter, the largest planets in the center, and then they taper off as you get further out, and then they taper off as you get further to the sun inside.
Right, uh-huh.
And that's why it doesn't circulate at the equator of the sun. It comes kind of on a plane where it kind of tilted, because mm-hmm. that's where that other gravity body went. And so they go into that kind of detail, and 500 million years ago, life was planted here, and about a million years ago, they had the first moral decision made, and then we were registered as an inhabited planet. Someone made a goodwill decision, I mean a free will decision. And that's what the angels really compete to do, is develop life in the shortest span of time.
Oh.
So they thought, hey, we only did it 500 million years, that's pretty good.
So, some of the traditionalists might not agree with the dates that you're putting out there. I think it's fascinating. I don't agree with some of the traditionalists, but I found what you have in the or what is in the Urantia book and of course your book made a lot of sense to me.
And they talk about all the different races traveling across the earth and how the red man kind of got stranded over on the western hemisphere, and the rest of the races more mingled together, and how Adam and Eve came here 35,000 years ago really is a physical gift of grace to the planet. And all planets get an Adam and Eve.
Mm.
And they have one old world they describe of the source of the Adam and Eve. And these people come to a planet like ours and try to first spiritually teach us. And also they are supposed to have like a million kids, and then their kids are supposed to spread out amongst the whole planet and make it one color, one race, one happy place.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they only had like 40 kids, and the whole thing went down the toilet.
Well, we want everybody to know what the phone number is, Kelly. Pierce County, 253-584-1480. King County, 253-804-5765. And if your organization wants to raise money, I'm available as a speaker for an informative evening. And or if you're looking for something new for your party, call me, and I hopefully could amuse your guests. So if you wish to reach me for counseling, my coming classes at Pierce College or Discovery University in September, for readings from your angels, past life regression, talk to those passed over, you can reach me at 253-845-4907 or email me at Marilyn@angelicasgifts.com. You can also make a contribution to continue this program on the air and select a topic or guest for a program. And I would like Kelly to know that's exactly how he ended up on the show today, was there was a request to find out more about the Urantia book.
Oh, really?
Yes. A person I know has had your book for many years and has been very intrigued, and he kept saying, you should have this someone on from that book. You know, you should have people hear about it. So that's exactly how we're having today's program. So that's, people do have a request once in a while, and we like to hear about your request, too.
And the important thing to stress is my book isn't trying to tell everybody I got information no one else has. There's many paths to God. And that's one thing stressed in the Urantia book. People don't need a book to find God. It's all within them if they follow the leadings of their spirit.
Well, Kelly, we do have a caller, so hang on.
Okay.
Welcome to Solutions with Marilyn. Who are we? Do we have today?
This is Mac from Seattle.
Oh, hi, Mac. Glad that you're calling. And what is your question for Kelly?
I love a comment than a question.
Oh.
I got into the Urantia book kind of the same way you did, Kelly. I had a relative that had the book, and I got to reading the last part about this, the story of Jesus, and it was so much more extensive than our Bible that when I got home, I bought the book so I could read the whole thing, and then I got interested in the front of the book. And I make some comparisons. I often make comparisons between what I see in the Urantia book and what I've learned that's come through Edgar Casey. Are you familiar with Edgar Casey?
Not too much. I should be more wider read.
Edgar Casey's story of the creation evolution only has five races, whereas the Urantia book has seven races. They include the five that Casey talks about, and then also the blue and the green, which is, it's been a long time since I've read this, said that they were warlike and they basically annihilated each other. But Casey doesn't talk about these at all. And it looks like there's also an eighth race if you consider the Andonites as being another distinct race. And I guess they would be kind of a brown people. And I wonder if you have any insight on any of this. And then a last question would be, who are the Wayfarers? I don't have my book here, but I think a lot of the chapters were credited to the Wayfarers as the authors, and I don't know who the Wayfarers are.
Yeah, I think they were talking about the Midwayers is what you...
Midwayer, that might be it.
That's the most bizarre story of the whole Urantia book. That was my kids' favorite, because I read a good portion of the Urantia book to them as they were growing up. Every night I'd read two or three pages till we worked through the whole last, third of the book. But I guess the overall thing, they do cover evolution and all these different races coming and going and rising up and falling, and how a lot of the real treasure of humanity was destroyed in wars.
Mac, would you turn your radio off if you have it on?
I don't have a radio on.
Oh, okay.
And so they talk kind of how there was just so much of devastation and how man had to kind of go backwards so many times because of wars. Midwayers they talk about are people who are kind of midway between angels and humans, and they were an offspring of the Adam and Eve race that they generated. And these people are really the only long-term inhabitants, because we come and go. Men were born and die after less than 100 years, and we go off to where we're going to go. The Midwayers always stay here. They're the real permanent residents of the planets, and I really thought that was strange. We're not the permanent Earthlings, because we go, Marilyn. So that they're discussed in their own separate chapter in the Urantia book. And they're really the people who work behind the scenes, and they talk about how they try to guide our society, keep it from destroying itself, and they kind of work and kind of show up when they're really needed the most. And you think of things like the Cuban Missile Crisis or kind of helping the, real tragedies from happening. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I was just listening.
Marilyn.
Now, the Midwayers, I wish they had my book so I could confirm it, but a great number of the chapters had a credit as to who these chapters came from. Was it the Midwayers or the...
Well, that's one thing that puzzles me the most about the Urantia book is here you have all these revelations they talk about of God, and they were people. They were personalities that came to teach us. Why did they throw a book at us? We weren't good enough to have another person? Or was society just so fractured that everyone would fight over who, where he was born, or why aren't you living here, why are you living in the West, why are you in the East? So they threw a book at it, because right now we're so fractured and contentious.
Well, I recommend anybody who is really interested to read the Urantia book. It's I've had a copy for, at least 20 years, and I haven't sat down and read it from one cover to the other. I scatter around, but it's just terribly fascinating to read, And I think an awful lot of it I can really relate to. I think that's the way things happen. I'll let you go. I'll drop off here, but I do appreciate you taking my question.
Oh, thanks for calling, Mac, and you can always call again. And, Kelly, I know one of the things that I was interested in reading it was the Urantia's version of the Lord's Prayer said, "Save us in temptation," instead of the traditional version that we have. And I was at a spiritual group recently where they were talking about that very phrase. And is it a matter of different translation, or was it at one point just misunderstood, or why would that be different?
Well, I think a lot has to do with humans. Humans heard Jesus say the prayer. Humans get pass it on by word of mouth. Eventually it gets written in one language, translated to another. And people at that time have thought of God as a different way, really, back then. You got to remember that back then the main thing was fear of God, and sacrifice was the main way of worship. And they go a lot of that into the Urantia book about the evolution of the concept of God from fear to faith, from believing if God is a loving personality rather than a volcanic God who's going to fire and brimstone you. And so a lot has to do with thinking that he sends devils to trick us, like lead us not into temptation, but it's more save us, support us when we, our own human self, is tempted. So it's a lot more the way you look at your whole reality, not just a translation. People thought of God as someone who they had to placate with sacrifices. And that's one of the main differences between the story in the Orange Book of Jesus and mainstream Christianity, is they talk about how Jesus didn't really come to die for our sins as much as to teach us about God. And we more put it into a perspective that that he was the final sacrifice, and we could move on to prayer, ministry, and good works as a way of approaching God rather than sacrifice. So that whole concept of original sin, hell, torture by God is pretty much put aside in the Urantia book.
And that's one of the reasons why I like it. It's much more appealing to me that way.
And it doesn't go into where you're free of all guilt and that kind of stuff, but they talk about how God's not going to torture someone for eternity. The worst thing that could happen to you is that you don't exist anymore when you die. And that is really the ultimate punishment they talk about in this book, that if you just separate yourself so much from God, from your actions on earth, eventually you could really spiritually die before you even physically die.
Oh, I can understand that one. I've had some experiences probably about what you're talking about. And we want you to return after these messages. We are going to be talking about prayer and meditation, what the Urantia book says about that also. So don't go away and stay tuned, and we'll be back just shortly with after these messages. Welcome back to Solutions with Marilyn. We're so glad you're here listening to Kelly today, and his book is called The Fifth Revelation. It's based on the Urantia book, which we're discussing. Everything that he has in his book, minus a few of his own comments, which I noticed were very nicely put in there, is part of this Urantia book that is the discussion for today. And I want people to know that you too can sponsor this program by calling me at 253-845-4907. Get your message out, get your business name out into the public, and for a very reasonable fee. And next week we have Dr. Mona Gustafson-Affinito, who will talk about forgiveness, which is a topic some people find very difficult to do. And we're always told to do it. I'm sure she has some insight for us. And the following week after her is Glenn Brooks, who will talk about there is no such thing as failure. Oh, wow, terrific. You mean I'm not a failure? And I know it has a lot to do with attitude. So you'll want to hear what Glenn Brooks has to say about no failure in your life. And you can look at it from a different point of view. Now we're going to talk to Kelly. And in the Urantia book, it does, Kelly, talk about prayer and meditation, and we were talking about the Lord's Prayer just before the break. What does it say in there about that?
Well, they have the main thrust I would get from an overview is not repetition, to have more conversation with God, a nice, easy conversation where it's more like you're talking to your father or more like you're talking to your friend, and moving more from asking God for things to have just a general discussion of your situation in life. And so I look, when I try to pray, there's a great program put on by Stillness Program that I picked up that really gives me a feeling of moving from prayer to worship to meditation when you have that unplug from the day when you're trying to reconnect with your spiritual side, and then eventually quiet. And so I guess the thing they stress about for children is to teach the children about God really on the outdoors. Use nature as an example, like Jesus did in so many of his parables. Use an example of the tree reaching its roots in the ground and its leaves thrusting themselves up in the sky to reach the light. And, you know, you try to pick examples where the kids can appreciate things they understand to spiritual concepts.
I think that's a great idea. So many groups will have retreats out in nature, and they're very effective.
Yeah, it's a lot better than being in a dark room that the kids are crawling to get outside and run around and scream. And so it's helped me a good bit with the kids and trying to get them in situations and not just talk about God when you're at church or that kind of deal, but do it as more of an everyday thing in life. And try to, when they go to bed, actually there's 7 prayers in the Urantia book that are really worth downloading off the net if you want. I think it's around page 1600 or something in your answer book where they have prayers from neighboring planets.
Oh, well, that's a great idea.
They have 7 prayers, and I try to read. They have one. I've named them for the days of the week, and I try to read them to the kids at night when we go to bed. We'll get one of them to read the prayer.
Oh.
And that way you have a different prayer for each night. And they're almost kind of like the Lord's Prayer, but taking it from almost you can feel a different society's perspective.
Oh, really?
Yeah, one's more like a mother society, you can almost feel like, from reading these. And it's really interesting.
Oh, that's good to know.
There's even a chapter in the Urantia book titled Government on a Neighboring Planet. And you can read about how the society's structured. And the only reason they used the death penalty on that planet is for betrayal of the public trust.
Wow.
That would give a wake-up call to the guys in Washington, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would change things quickly. you have a chapter on handling life's troubles. What kind of troubles were you in your chapter that you can help us with?
I guess they discussed how the worst affliction in life would be never to be afflicted. And I think people have heard that before. That if, say, you were born without any real troubles and spoiled, your parents gave everything you want, you had all the money you wanted, you would probably be more poor in spirit than the person who's had to struggle his entire life. You learn so much lessons through your afflictions, and really if you follow the guidance of the angel that's part of your life, your guardian angel, you will not have a life of ease. He'll lead you to rugged hills of moral choosing and situations of learning, and those things aren't, they don't come without affliction. So if anything, they talk about how to really reach the heights of spirituality in heaven, you have to really fatten upon disappointment and embrace it and look upon it as a challenge to learn something. And I've yet to succeed with that.
Well, I'm sure trudging that road, I'll tell you. I've had a lot of afflictions and various turmoils, crisis, etc., and I have learned a lot.
So I would guess the another thing it gave me was really ways to deal with anger and raising lots of kids and trying to take a longer view than getting excited about the moment. And one of the things that was mentioned in the Urantia book, I think I'll repeat in my book, is that angels really find it hard to understand why humans are so dominated by fear.
Oh, I didn't mark that down to talk about that. I'm glad you brought it up.
And they're so thoroughly demoralized by panic and dread and anxiety, and so much of our thoughts, so much of our mind, during the day, it's just consumed by this anxiety and fear, and there's very little spiritual effort going on. And that's really something I read. Can you imagine being the guardian angel stuck with me all day, listening to my worries about the stock market, my job, or whatever, and very little is spent on the time of what did I learn to appreciate today, or what did I do to help my kids learn to handle life better or something like that.
Well, one of the things I picked up out of your book was talking about addiction, and one of my listeners did mention they'd like to hear more about alcoholism on my show, but what your talk was, in your quote, you talked about that addiction was a physical poison and mental poisons of fear, anger, envy, jealousy, suspicion, and intolerance that interferes with spiritual progress, and I thought maybe you could expand on that for us.
I guess the thing they focus on for addictions is more not it's to so stress the spiritual side of your life that it displaces the side of your life where the poisons are. And that's not so much giving up something, say giving up cigarettes for chewing gum, as much as getting so involved with the trying to have your mind like a temple that it's cleansed so that you can use it efficiently, and you're stressing that so much that cigarettes just fall away, not so much as displaced by something else. I know that might sound kind of idealistic, but that's what they stress: the most effective way to improve yourself is to just try so hard to connect with your spiritual side and try to do the leadings of what is right, and eventually those things just fall aside like just pure neglect.
Well, that's really what the 12-step programs are coming from, and it's kind of a version of perfect love casteth out all fear.
Mm-hmm.
And as that love and more spirituality comes into your life, the things do tend to drop away and leave and are not so significant, and because you're just not focusing on them like you used to.
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at your kids and feel how they must look at you, and you look at what you're doing, you don't want to act that way. You don't even think about acting that way. And so that's kind of the guide I try to feel like is, first, my angel's looking over my shoulder, and they have to hear what I'm thinking, not just what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
That makes me have pause for what comes out of my mouth, not just what I'm thinking.
Right.
And then I start thinking how my kids are learning from me and all my actions, not what I'm saying, but my example I'm setting.
Right.
And so that kind of led me to clean up my act, which has always had room for improvement.
Well, one of the verses when I was in Sunday school was that I seemed to get quite often was thought, words, and deeds. And today I know how they need to be consistent and congruent.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that they really have a lot of guidance for is the evolution of the soul and how it takes place in your life.
You want to talk more about that?
Yeah, and that's what really our goal in life is, to try to achieve such a spiritual foundation that we have a soul that it can exist after death.
Mm-hmm.
They go a lot into that and what death is like and what you do in heaven. It's not just sitting on a cloud. It's progressing further and further towards the spiritual and becoming less physical as we move closer to God through millions and billions of planets. It's really a vast view of our future. It's so exciting. But the evolution of the soul here on Earth, it kind of describes our body as a ship. And our soul is kind of the captain of the ship, and our guardian angel is the pilot. Now, we don't have to listen to the pilot. He can guide us away from shoals and lead us through the harbors. We're really the captain. We don't have to listen to that pilot, but our body that is the ship is sure going to be safer if we follow the pilot's instructions. And so it's really, they describe how dreams are the deep spiritual transformations that are going on into our mind, and how our brain is actually more active when we're asleep than when we're awake. And if you look at these charts of people dreaming, those waves, I don't know, when your eyeballs are going back and forth,
mm-hmm.
That's when your brain is really active and your guardian angel is sitting there sorting out all your thoughts of the day and constructing your soul and throwing out bad ideas and putting together new thoughts in this direction and trying, so when you wake up, sometimes you have some great ideas, things have calmed down, you're not as anxious.
Exactly.
You might approach things from a different perspective, and that's all work that's been done while you're asleep, but they really caution you to not try to, your dreams are so combobulated that it's tough to interpret them. You may luck out and do it sometimes, but for the most part, we're so distant from our spiritual side, not many people can pull that off.
Well, I've gradually over the years have a better understanding than I used to, and I do know that it is a sorting out process, and things that sometimes you can't really sort out consciously does happen at night. I've found that to be true in my life.
Mm-hmm. I just identified that with that so much with waking up and just feeling more at ease, and that's something I appreciate and look for a good night's sleep for that. The other thing that they describe in this book is really the where heaven is and how all the planets, and I mean all the galaxies, are revolving around that. And they've recently discovered that in astronomy, that all the galaxies in the universe revolve around this unseen mass that weighs 1,000 times the rest of all the mass in the universe.
You are a mind reader. That was the next topic I was going to bring up.
Yeah, that's a good one to cover. They talk, right now, if you took the Hubble telescope, one of the scientists said, well, let's point it in the emptiest part of sky, and I want to focus it on there for a week. And all the other scientists said, you're wasting the time, we have all these other experiments, and no, let's try it. So he finally convinced them to do it, Marilyn, and they pointed it to the most empty part of the sky where they didn't think anything existed and left it there for a week. And they've published the pictures now. You can find them on the internet on the NASA.
Wow. Site.
If you hold a grain of sand at arm's length, that's about the size of the piece of sky. And they found 100 galaxies more massive than the Milky Way just in that spot. And those were 500,000 light years away. And so they've kind of done this, and they've mapped around three concentric circles of galaxies now, all revolving around this unseen mass. So there's three huge, massive circles of galaxies all revolving around what the Urantia book describes as paradise. And the Urantia book says only the inner circle of these galaxies is presently inhabited. And that's really our future, they describe in the Urantia book. And it's all conjecture. The angels say they really don't know why God's making all these humans. But eventually they embrace God, and God sends them out to this next circle of galaxies. And they think that the angels did the first galaxy and helped develop it. Well, it's the humans that died and went to heaven that are going to develop the next one.
Oh.
So if you want a real broad view of your future, a couple billion years in the future, that's what the Urantia book conjectures your purpose may be.
Oh, interesting. I never heard that one before.
That's pretty far-fetched.
Yeah. Well, a lot of things in this book really cause you to do some thinking. There's no doubt about that. It has a lot of new ideas and some different ideas for things that we've traditionally heard over the years. And it does talk a little bit differently about the life of Jesus than the traditional Bible, and I'd like to talk a little bit about that. There's some differences like the fall of man and the flood. In your book, you pointed out there really wasn't a flood as such. But it was there were areas that flooded, but not the whole world.
Yeah, they really go through great descriptions of the book of Job and Noah and how all these stories and revelations that are in the Bible came about, and what the historical background were and how the spiritual meanings came from them. Not just the Western religions, but also the Eastern religions and the of Buddha and the Tao and all the different faiths and their origins, and it's really just great stories.
Well, we are going to be back in just a few minutes to hear a little bit more about the Urantia book. We're getting quite an education today, thanks to Kelly Elstrat and his book, The Fifth Revelation. And stay tuned. Don't go away. We're going to find out more about spirituality today, and we'll be back shortly. Welcome back to Solutions with Marilyn. We're talking with Kelly Elstrat today. He's written a book called The Fifth Revelation, and it's based on the Urantia book. And we're just really excited that he's here today because we're learning a lot. You too can sponsor this program, so call 253-845-4907. Or you can choose to ensure this show continuing on the air by making a contribution. And you can reach me at the same number. Or for counseling, classes, readings from your angels, past life regression, or to talk to those passed over, call me at 253-845-4907. Or you can email me at marilyn@angelicasgifts.com, M-A-R-I-L-Y-N, at, one word for Angelica's Gifts, A-N-G-E-L-I-C-A-S-G-I-F-T-S.com. And we want to hear from you, and our sponsors want to hear from you also, that you have heard them, their messages, and that you are glad they're supporting this program. We were talking with Kelly off the air about how you people listening can reach Urantia organization and get his book. And Kelly, do you want to give that information to them now?
Yeah, they could reach me directly if they want to just order one. I could give it to you for about $10 instead of $16 that's in the bookstore. My address is K-E-L-S as in Sam, T-R-O-T, at yahoo.com. That's K-L-S-T-R-O-T, K-E-L-S-T-R-O-T. Or you could go to the Urantia Book websites, like ubfellowship.org. If you dig around there, eventually you'll find it. but or try to go to New Age bookstores. It's good to support them, or Barnes & Noble's probably got it, and those kind of guys.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a book that, your book is a much easier way to get started, I'll have to admit. And I really have found that it was, it is just kind of like the appetizer.
One thing I did in the book to try to lighten it up a little bit, because it's kind of heavy topics, is
right.
I have 60 works of fine art in there, mostly spiritual Renaissance art.
You are a mind reader. I was going to ask you about that next.
That was the fun part of doing a book.
Yeah, how did you decide which pieces of art to use? And you collected them, obviously, from quite a few museums, but not all of them
were
pictures.
My wife is French, and we go back there about every other summer to see a relative and bring the kids, and I drag them through all these museums, and I just started writing down names of paintings that I really liked that conveyed concepts like, say, forgiveness or anger or the soul, and it's tough to kind of find a picture that represents a spiritual concept, and it's all artist privilege. I can pick anything to represent resurrection or death or evolution even, and so I try to, for each section of my book, have a painting, and that was the fun part, really, was going through all these treasures of art and going back 500 years and picking paintings and going, I want this in my book, and then trying to find someone who will give you permission to let you do it and get an original copy of a picture of it.
Well, now, did you have to worry about copyrights? A lot of the pictures you picked were like 1500s or,
yeah,
I mean, very old.
That really cost more than publishing the book was the copyright permission.
Is that right?
And when I do a book tour, what I do is I show a lot of those paintings from color slides rather than, seeing it black and white like it is in the book.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of fun to see all the color paintings.
Oh, that would bring it alive. I'm surprised they're not part of the public domain when they're that old.
Well, some of them you think would, but my own Catholic Church hit me up. The most expensive was the picture of Michelangelo where God is fingers touching Adam.
Oh, yes, that's a very famous.
I mean, they wanted like $500 to use their picture, and I've got some of the paintings for $15 from a nondescript museum in Germany or something.
Uh-huh. That's interesting, isn't it? I wouldn't have thought of that.
Well, it was great fun to pick the paintings.
Well, we have a little time left to talk about spirituality, and you mentioned that it is a spiritual renaissance inside ourselves. That's really what this is all about. And that reminded me of the words to the song that says, "Let it begin with me." And is this what you feel is one of the basic ideas of the book?
Well, they have this, they go into discussions of all these angels, which are the living ladder to God. And the angels minister to us and help lift us up. And when we die, we have other angels that are more spiritual that take us to the next level. And then we move on to other ones. And it's really exciting to think that we're sharing our lives, not just with our animal mind, but we're building this soul, and there's this angel here that's trying to guide us. And it kind of, it's almost an intrusion on your privacy at first when you start to think about it. It kind of spooked me. But you start thinking that this is your partner. And I guess that's something that I really look forward to, is trying to settle myself more so that I can appreciate that guidance.
Was there anything, I think that's important, was there anything that talked about disease in the book that we would maybe could help us in our daily living today, that we could have less of that?
Well, they have, that's really what Adam and Eve's main function was, besides spiritually uplifting. They were supposed to be the physical gift of grace from God that would bring disease to an end on this planet. They looked at all the diseases that occurred from side chain reactions and evolution, and Adam and Eve's blood was supposed to contain the antidote to all that.
Mm-hmm.
If we would have gotten a heavier dose of it across the world, we would have brought an end to many diseases. But they talk about how once we uncover the DNA structure, a lot of that's going to get cured, and I think we're starting to see that already, that they can find a lot of the breakdowns in what portions of the DNA is causing a lot of the cancers and troubles that we're having, and they can, it probably is not going to be in our lifetime, though, Marilyn. They're going to find ways to plug those keys and eventually clean that up. But they talk about how it would be in the future. Now, they also talk about the power of prayer in bringing health, and how so much people have already discovered how attitude has a lot to do with bringing cancer under control and that kind of stuff, and how anxiety is not just a spiritual poison, it's a physical one.
I found that to be true in my life.
And so they give guidance for centering yourself so that you don't tear your body up just with worry and anxiety. And then also if you have prayer is not an answer to everything. You can't just pray and have all your problems be solved. It's more asking for strength to handle your own problems.
Exactly.
And recharging your spiritual batteries rather than getting a ready solution under the Christmas tree.
Well, I'm going to be teaching a class here locally on holistic health, which employs the very concepts you're talking about. And I'm also going to be teaching a separate class on meditation for Pierce College this fall, which is also the areas that you're covering today. And so if people are interested in hearing more about those kinds of things, how to help their life improve and be healthier with their attitudes changing and so forth, it's really it's a self-help thing. You got to be able to get in there and look at those things and change your whatever needs to be changed. But it takes the courage to do it, and that's where the prayer comes in, asking for that help.
Mm-hmm. I just find the whole Urantia book concept to be just so uplifting, to think that we have this eternity awaiting us, and that it's such a discovery that we've just started out on a path on, that there's so many more interesting people to meet.
Well, that's one of the last questions I'm going to ask you today, is can you give us a small little understanding better about eternity?
Well, they talk about how we're going to have over 200 senses. If you can imagine the exponential difference just in having 5 senses to go to over 200, that in itself, and how you'll be able to travel almost the speed of light from one place to another, and how you can, those two things right there in itself, it was pretty exciting, and how you move on to the local constellation after you died, and then you get to see the people that you knew in Earth, and that you don't remember your memories as much as by sharing with. You recognize people's personalities,
mm-hmm.
but your memories only come back in sharing them with other people.
Oh.
And that's pretty interesting.
Right. Well, Kelly, we want to thank you for a terrific show today. I know my listeners heard and learned a lot of information that they don't usually hear on radio, and that's terrific that you were here, and thank you for your time and your having all this wonderful information.
Yeah, I hope you all find the fifth revelation somehow, and it brings you a little closer to your spiritual.
Well, we're glad you were here today, Kelly. Have a great day, and we want to thank Andrew and Brad over at STOP for supporting this program and keeping us on the air for all our listeners. And you, too, can sponsor your program, this program, by having commercials on this air. And have a great day, everybody. The sun is out, and we're just glad you were listening in here today. And tune in next week. We don't want to have you miss the program, because next week's on forgiveness. It might be just the one you needed. Don't miss it next week, Wednesday at noon, Solutions with Marilyn. And enjoy the sun. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you, Marilyn.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
You've been listening to Marilyn Solutions. Listen again next week for another informative show with guests from coast to coast. For a copy of today's program or a copy of her new book, Roses Have Thorns, and videotapes on empowerment and spiritual tools for healing domestic violence, write to KLAY in care of Marilyn Solutions, 10025 Lakewood Drive Southwest, Tacoma, Washington, 98499. Or visit her website at Marilyn@angelicasgifts.com.
Many people are looking for a new direction and a lift in spirit. Hello, I'm Reverend Marilyn, a counselor, teacher for over 30 years, and a spiritual advisor for addictions, codependency, domestic violence, past lives, and holistic healing. Join me every Wednesday at noon for Marilyn Solutions, a program sure to be of interest to everyone. We will talk with guests from coast to coast, offering a wide range of talents and information. That's Marilyn Solutions, Wednesdays at noon on your news and information station, KLAY 1180.